outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of Bravada's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gin.
Well, it isn't easy to get out of town, Kyle. We're trying.
I know, you're trying to cut loose and I keep dragging you back in and saying, no, we got to record later.
No, this has nothing to do with you. This has everything to do with the fact that there are snow showers over the Grapevine, which is our exit from here to get up to my dad. Sarah and I didn't make it up for Christmas because of some situations. And so we were hoping to visit my dad and there's just snow everywhere in the Ridge Route. Just opened 5 minutes ago. We're not leaving till tomorrow morning, so hopefully if it's still open, we'll get out. But then the question is, can we get back through? We've got a series of storms coming through California, which is absolutely awesome because we've had zero rains. We had one rainstorm this year until this last week and now coming into this week. So looks like a wet one, lots of snow, and my dad got 6 inches yesterday up there. So
nice.
Yeah, so we're still hoping to get up there, but we won't know till early tomorrow morning if we can get out or not. So,
my family in Springville was all posting photos of them getting snowed on, and they were all excited about it and stuff. But I just want to inform you, for everybody who doesn't live in Southern California, you know you can drive in snow, right?
Not on the Grapevine, you cannot.
What?
This is the most amazing thing in California. This is a major highway. Connects LA with the Bay Area, the Central Valley. They do not plow it. They just close it in the snow. And they close it. If you have four-wheel drive, you can't go. They roadblock it, and that's it.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, Highway 80 over to Tahoe, they plow that. They go up north to Oregon, they plow that. But for whatever reason, they've decided snowstorms are so rare that they're not going to do it. Last time Sarah and I tried to go because it snowed on the route, closed it one morning that we were going to leave. So we went the other way around. We go up the coast and then across near in San Luis Obispo. It took us 9.5 hours to get to my dad's place.
Oh my gosh.
Never doing that again. It was right after Christmas. Traffic was horrible. It was bumper to, it was a nightmare. So this is one of the strangest things about a state that prides itself on its economy and keeping things moving, and they just shut the route. And
And especially, I've been on the Grapevine when there's been fog where you can't see the next dot on the line in the road in front of you.
We don't care about that.
They just drive like that's normal. But you get a half inch of snow on the Grapevine, they're like, eh, let's shut it off.
As soon as the first non-four-wheel drive car starts skidding, boom, closed. And there was one time, actually, I had a meeting in Sacramento. I was leaving up Oxnard. We used to live there. I was driving up there. I got to the Castaic, which is right when you start going up the main part of the Grapevine.
Yep.
And a cop car comes ripping in front of me, lights on, and starts swerving, slows down the whole thing, and makes us get off at the next exit. And I was the first car that did it. And I had that 8-hour drive around, because I had to backtrack an hour to where I lived, and then start another 8-hour
drive. Cut across.
But I had a bridge builder event in Sacramento, and
oh my gosh.
Couldn't be late. So, yeah, I don't know what tomorrow will hold. We may blow off this trip for a couple of weeks and stay home, but haven't seen my dad since summer. And we've tried to get up there since the fires. And it's just been a series of things that have kind of kept it from happening. So, we'll see.
Well, I know one of my weirdest experiences ever happened in California. And that was me having to buy chains because we were up in Mount Baldy. And they wouldn't let us come out of the mountains without buying snow chains. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I've lived like all my life in wintry places, have never bought chains, never driven, didn't even know how to put them on.
What you don't understand is California drivers without chains, you just don't, that's a way to keep people off the road because a lot of people don't have them.
No, that's fair.
And if people don't have them, you don't want them up there. Even if you don't, like we have them. We've never put them on because we have a four-wheel drive car, so we don't ever need them. But there comes a point where you cannot cross here if you don't have chains. That's just
I was even in a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah.
No, I was like, what are you doing?
Even if you don't use them, you have to have them. And so that's how I think maybe they make the chains here in California. So they have lots of people dragging chains around in their car. But yeah, it is a way to keep the people who can't drive out of the mountains during a time like this. Anyway, we do the whole thing on snow driving in California, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And we want to welcome you to this episode of The God Journey, number 384, some crazy. Who can we tick off this time?
let's see where we go with this. I've been reading some of the comments on the blogs, on the Facebook accounts, on the God Journey, and just wanted to check in. How are you? I mean, I've seen some of your responses and just wanted to hear how your heart's doing in the midst of all of this.
I get that email a lot. People are going, "Are you okay, man?" Because people really the last month or so, just having been spoken out on some things that I'm passionate about, that I think does affect our God journey. We talked about delusion, but there have been a few people who thought that was specifically targeted toward anybody who likes Trump. And no matter how hard you tell them, no, that's not what it was about. They're just fully convinced it was. So people ask, how are you doing, man? Because people, and that's been one of the things we talked about, is how vicious people get and how willing they are to go to accusations about my integrity, my faith, my whatever, because they get our podcast to mean something it didn't. Mm. And even when you tell them, look, that's not what we were talking about, the answer is, oh, yes, it was. They go, okay, well, see, I don't know where to go from there. But as far as how I'm doing personally, you know what? I've spent a lot of years now being accused of stuff.
Yeah.
People say, how do you respond to that? My first inclination to accusation is there any truth in this? And I know it just is. You know, is there anything I'm missing? Because if people misunderstood, did we have some, here's the age we live in. You can't deny your motives. Everybody knows your motives better than you know your own motives.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. You cannot say, look, that's not what we intended, because nobody believes you. And we did warn flat out on the thing. I said, listen, if you're a real, you know, if you're in the tank for some of this insurrection stuff and you loved what happened in DC, and I even know the word insurrection is like saying baby killers about abortion, or saying pro-choice, pro-life, anti-immigration, illegal immigration, undocumented worker. There's vocabulary we can't use now, because if you use it, you have flagged who you are. And there's just so much of that. It makes my heart hurt. Mm. But my first thing is always, is there any truth in this? Let's search my heart. Does it hit me painfully? It does not for me anymore. I'm sorry. Yeah. I've been accused of committing adultery falsely. I've been accused of stealing church funds falsely. I've been accused of all kinds of stuff in my life, because when you don't follow the status quo, and that's one of my big triggers in the political environment that we're in. You cannot navigate the conversation without being fully in the tank, one side or the other. And if you're not, if you just say something that offers criticism to one side, you're on the other side. And I get that both from my friends on the left, because I don't totally diss Trump or his time in office, because I like many of his policies. So I don't totally do that. But on the other side, if you just say, hey, some of the temperament and some of this, you know, false fraud in the election, it is a problem. And yet my heart hurts for people who have believed some of that rhetoric about the election. Now, if we want to talk about, was the voting done fairly in the sense that a lot of mailed out ballots, were they vetted properly? I think if we're going to go to mailed out voting or whatever, we really do need to make sure that it's every vote getting counted and counted fairly and counted once.
Yeah.
We just do. And I think if anybody can't admit, look, during this pandemic, states changed some of the rules and some crazy stuff may have happened. We don't know, but let's find out. But you can't do that at contesting the fraudulency of an election that the other guy really won but didn't. And but there's people I know that are saying that I wouldn't say are deluded. They believe that. They've been told that. They're absolutely sure that's true.
Yeah.
But just because I don't, then that's who I was really talking about. Man, I was talking about people who've come out of cults, who suffer under abusive relationships with spouses or parents. There's a whole lot to that delusion framework and the dialogue that they can't have because they get so angry and clouded. I think their mind gets clouded. And yeah, people did take offense because they think I hate Trump and therefore I hate them. And that's just so inconsistent with being a guy who writes about love. But that's not where my heart's at all. I love people who get caught up in stuff. I don't make my relationship with someone dependent upon whether they do or do not see Trump or like Trump or whatever they say about the election. I much more appreciate people who write and say, hey, Wayne, I have some questions about what you shared. Because this is, this, I'm not sure. And I had one guy, we've had an extensive conversation because he was like, whoa, hey, this seemed a little out of the norm for what you normally do on the God journey. And I said, happy to talk about it. And we have, and we will, we're continuing to talk about it. But that was a much bigger podcast. What I have really treasured, and this is how, why the false accusation stuff doesn't get to me. And I do get the email a lot from people saying, gosh, what must you have suffered to say the things you say now about religion and about, you know, because I have taken it. I've taken it from pastors who didn't like Finding Church or Beyond Sundays or So You Don't Want Church Anymore. I've taken it from people who hated The Shack because God's a mean, vindictive God and wants to beat people up and you made God too nice in The Shack. I have gotten this most of my life because I don't trade in, you know, sweet talking a certain side of the thing. I'm drilling down to what do I think is real. And we offer, we've done it through 384 episodes of The God Journey. So what I hope people do is if what I say resonates with you, take it. If it doesn't resonate with you, leave it. You don't have to get mad at me. I'm not sitting here ticking people off. I'm not making money at this. This is just simply because I love people on a journey. But the letters I really love, there are people that are saying, gosh, I've got people in my life like this that you can't talk to. They get angry, they make false accusations, make assumptions, believe their assumptions over conversation. And helping people see that's a toxic personality, give it some distance. Yeah. It's really been helpful for people to see that somehow the delusion is grounded in fear. Love is the antidote to fear. So I can still love people who don't see what I see. Even when people treat me harshly, I can still love them because it's not about me. It's not about it anymore. That's a whole Stefan conversation. These things are not unrelated.
No, they're not.
About being able to love people who don't see what you see and be kind to people, not be vicious. But the internet's a place where it's on my blog comments, and I haven't let all of them through. There's a couple I've left out because it was just pure name calling. Others I've tried to address, but I don't want the blog forum to degenerate into the internet hinterland of abuse and anger and trying to choose our side against someone else's side. So if you're not into, if you're not really, if you're hearing this conversation as an assault on you, stop listening, because that's not what we're doing, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's, you know, I love what you said about the first part where you process about, you know, is there any truth in it? Is there something that I need to heart check on? You know, like, Lord, is there something in here that I'm not seeing that you need me to engage with? You know, and I, like, for me, I think that's one of actually the first times that I've been called a yes man. That was interesting. That was an intriguing dialogue. You know, and yet I was pausing, I was thinking about it. And in some regards, you know, if I was to be honest, in some regards, I think I am still a little cautious in our friendship, to challenge you, because you have been a mentor and you have been somebody who has been a huge encouragement to me, and you're more seasoned than I am. So we'll just say it that way. And so, I've recognized, like, oh man, that's something I need to talk to Wayne about. And that's something that we need to process. And I need to be more diligent on, is like, how would I say that? Or what are, you know, what is going on in my heart with that? Or, you know, and for the most part, I think I've remained authentic to that, but I know that there's been times where I paused or I haven't said anything that I might could have, but it was an interesting reflection. But the other piece of that is that my family specifically, I wouldn't, to be bluntly honest, like, I have a very hard time and probably won't ever publicly share in detail what my political beliefs are one way or another. As a therapist that works with an audience that is very diverse, that comes from a lot of different perspectives, and then having family members that, I've got family members on both sides of the argument that if I identify in any hint of a way, one way or the other, I could be disowned. The conversation could shut down. The ability to even have a relationship with them could be over. And so it's like, I don't even choose, like, honestly, like, it's not an interesting comment, or it's not an interesting conversation for me, in the fact that if it costs me the relationships with the people that I love, then like it's just more important to me. My relationship and my ability to connect with them is more important to me. And that's not being a yes man. It's just saying I'm not willing to blast a family member with my quote unquote political agenda because if that's going to damage their heart, I don't want to go there. It's not that intriguing of a conversation for me. And to watch the turmoil that's been taking place in my family and watching people disown other people because they're leaning one side or the other. It's like, oh man, like, is that what we're going to do to each other?
And that's the whole country, isn't it?
Yeah.
Cause I would say, I wouldn't use this podcast either from my political point of view, except my thing is there's a way we've got to invite people to the middle. There's a way we've got to get and the language of healing is about that. Bridge Builders was about that for 25 years. We've talked about those things, not to push a pro-Trump, anti-Trump agenda, not to push a pro-left, anti-left, but to push how do we communicate past these things we feel so differently about? And I'm still, even though I'm Don Quixote, man, I am spitting into the wind because no one else in this country seems to care that we find the middle ground. Even some of what's being talked about by unity now in the Biden administration is still, let's find unity on our side of the ledger instead of let's find a common good big enough to encompass both. Because my heart does go out to 74 million people, whoever voted for Trump and did so, not all of them because they're bought into the whole Trump bandwagon, but some of them, many of them, because they liked his policies and they felt trampled on by the left, both the media and advocacy groups. And they just feel overwhelmed that everything is against them. Well, none of that's changed since this election. It only grown worse, if anything, that now we had it, we lost it, and now the other side has it. And they're hearing the same rhetoric they heard 4 years or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
When they lost another election. And quite frankly, if it turns around next election, then the rhetoric will go back the other way. And it's that tit for tat thing that I feel like is important enough to bring up here, because it is a lot of where my prayers and conversations and thoughts go these days. When I read Isaiah, I see the U.S. division in that story. When I hear, you know, prophesy illusion, I see people prophesying on one side of it or the other in the name of God. That stuff makes me quiver. And I'm incapable of not calling it out. Has there been anything in this conversation, Kyle, that you say, gosh, I wish I'd brought that up to Wayne and I just didn't have it, that wouldn't tick off your family? Or
no, as I was thinking about it, there wasn't any like a particular point that was like, ooh, I need to bring that back up with Wayne, or I need to come back to that. For me, it's more just, I guess for me, it was just a heart check, because I've been having a conversation with Jess about, and this is going in a completely different direction. But Jess and I had been just kind of processing about some of the real challenges that I've been having at work and just some of the trauma stuff that's been getting triggered in me. And one of the things that I've realized is authenticity and trying to live out of who I believe God's created me to be and being genuine with my heart, that's something that I'm very passionate about. But I realized that I'd started to move kind of back into that space where I was managing different personas, right? Like I was managing my therapy hat and my professional therapy hat and this high trauma center. And then like, you and I have like a mentor-mentee friendship relationship. And so I was managing that.
I've never defined our relationship as mentor-mentee.
I know you wouldn't.
It makes me cool when you say that.
I know me using that language is going to make you quiver, which is why I hesitate to even bring it up. But
I noticed you didn't.
Correct.
You didn't hesitate.
I didn't hesitate because part of it is that for me, that's not the way that you've extended relationship to me. It's been a friendship, a mutual, just walking in life together. And yet for me, there's been this this combination of like the friendship, the rich friendship that's been there, but also, I mean, being a 35-year-old, being able to glean from the experience of a 65-year-old who's lived life, that has a phenomenal marriage that I deeply respect, like that to me, like that's, I love having the opportunity to learn from that. And so there's like this, you know, there's that dynamic of the friendship, but then there's also like, man, that there's so much, like there's 35 years of wisdom there that I love tapping into and exploring and just be like, man, this is awesome. Cause I, you know, and so I know that you hate the mentor mentee language. You don't take on mentees. And I say that partially just to see you cringe and grin on the other side of this video. But it was just this dialogue between Jess and I of managing these different personas. And I beginning to recognize that even though I wasn't being initially or intentionally deceptive or intentionally like putting on a face, there was still a part of me that was quote unquote playing a role. And the more that I can move towards living at peace with who God's created me to be and at rest with that, that's what I want to constantly be aspiring to. And so when I hear like, yeah, you know, he was a yes man or like some of these other things, it was one of those conversations of like, oh, okay. So was I playing a role? Am I trying to maintain a role that isn't authentic to who God's created me to be? If so, how? And so do I think that I'm your yes man, Wayne? No, but it was a great heart check because it was like, oh, okay. Like what are some of those tendencies there? And it comes back to some of the stuff that we were talking about before about consciousness and where a lot of this stuff is processed in the brain. And, you know, I've been just really intrigued. There's been more. I sent you a video for a really cool 23-minute video about consciousness. And one of the things that I really liked about it was his dialogue about fear. And about fear I wish I had direct quotes to give you right now because I'm still processing. It's very raw for me. But the whole dialogue was about our perception of things and the way that we engage with life. And one of the most interesting things, and this guy isn't a believer in Christianity, but one of the things
he refers to faith some.
He does, absolutely. He references Jesus. And the thing that I really loved was that he considered the kingdom of heaven and light as synonymous aspects of each other, like that they were synonymous, that they were interchangeable with one another. And that was just so intriguing to me because I feel like a lot of the time we're looking out, especially in the season of life that we've been going through, in the chaos of the world that we've been going on, we've been very much looking out. And there's this fear. And he says that fear at its raw core is that we're looking out into the world and our fear is that it's not going to be the world that brings us the life and the wholehearted living and love that we expect it to. And so we're looking and we're projecting that outside of us instead of looking in at into our heart and engaging with the kingdom of God that's in us. You know, he quotes Jesus as saying the kingdom of God is now and the kingdom of God is in you. And that like, you know, that for me in all of this chaos, and we talked a little bit about it in the delusion episode a little while ago, where I felt like I was like, man, Wayne, I just need to like pause and look and reconnect with the spirit because I don't know what's going on right now. It just feels like a whirlwind, like this tornado. I can't see anything around me. And that's what I loved about this is like we're processing this, all this stuff going on around us. And there's this visceral fear that if we don't react or if we don't try to reach out and manufacture or change the story somehow, that we're going to be, that there's this scarcity mentality and we're going to get shortchanged. Instead of recognizing that the Holy Spirit is living in us and he is the source of true and abundant life. And that we have the ability to engage with that. And, you know, when we're processing things in this fight or flight mentality versus taking a deep breath and engaging with our mind and with our heart about, Lord, who do you say you are? And has your character really changed? Like, has your love for people really changed in the midst of a crazy election year, in the midst of a global pandemic? You know, has your love and your character really changed? Or have I allowed my thoughts and the attention of my consciousness to be put out on all the flurry and the concerns and the cares of the world that are going on around me, instead of taking that deep breath and looking inside and saying, Lord, what do you have to say? What are the nudges of your spirit? What are the encouragements that your love would say to me today? And I just went on a long rant. I'll let you respond.
No, that's fine. I have a lot of questions I'd love to ask you if we had time. But yeah. The thing about Hosea we talked about last week, about going into the Hosea 2, thing that's causing you trouble is the gateway into what else God wants to do in you. And I found that in that video where he talks about, man, the answers for life are not coming at you from the world or coming at you from religion, because that's all externalized stuff. And then if you're not getting what you want, you're a victim of somebody who's in the way of you not getting it. And that just increases anxiety and anger and lashing out. And I'm going to go fight for what I want, instead of, wow, when you settle enough to see what God is inviting you into in the midst of what's going on in the world. It's not an ignorance of what the world is doing to you, but not in the midst of this, where is life? And when he talked about everything I've ever planned didn't happen, and everything wonderful that I'm involved in now came my way, and I recognized a moment and made a choice, went through a door, found another door. We've had that conversation.
Oh, absolutely. I was chuckling. That's why I sent the video to you. I thought you were going to connect with that. I was laughing about that.
And we'll post that in the podcast notes if you want to take a look at the video we're talking about. It's not really the video. It's just, it kind of summarized a lot of things we've explored together and we've explored on the God journey. Because I do think when you navigate life as a victim of everything else everybody else is doing, you end up afraid you won't have enough, that scarcity thing, and then angry at the people you perceive are keeping you from getting the stuff you want or the stuff you need. And I'm not talking about possessions. I'm also talking about the world you want to live in and how we get that world to happen. And man, I get exhausted, even some of the conversations around the Delusioned podcast, which I will still stand by. I think that stuff will tell you a lot about people in your life. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't done or written. The original blog on Livestream wasn't written to accuse people of being deluded. It wasn't. Yeah. And if you felt accused, my bad, my apology, I'm sorry. That's not why I wrote it. What I wrote it was for people living near those who are in delusion. Mm-hmm. And having a better sense, that toolkit to kind of process the pain of other people and find a way to love them. Because that whole, you referred to it a little bit, we just talked about briefly on a podcast. We keep talking about doing a whole podcast on it someday, but we always get to it at the end and there's just not time. But this whole scientific study done in the early 2010s about, we process political thought and religious thought in the amygdala, which is, and they were doing this research because people with deep political or religious convictions don't change those convictions, even when presented with evidence that would at least cause them to reconsider and not abandon their position, but maybe alter it a bit.
Yeah.
But they don't, because it's so firm. And I grew up in that kind of religious environment, much more than political. And then when Bob's vision a couple of years ago of this political and religious spirit dancing together, and how believers were being swept up in it. Not all believers. It's not a blanket condemnation,
correct,
but a number of believers. And then to read in this research that political thought and religious thought are processed in the same area of the brain, which is a strong tribal identity. It's the amygdala. It's the fight or flight response, which if someone's coming at you in the dark with a knife, fight or flight is a powerful, wonderful, God-given response. But it's not necessarily the best response to everything in your life. And if you're responding out of fear, and I had this discussion with someone this week, you want to talk about Ananias and Sapphira. I think the whole trajectory of Scripture is seeing God after the fall as a terrifying presence who's out to get us because he's offended by our sin, and coming to win us into the reality. Oh, and that's not just in the New Testament, through the Old. Your loving kindness is better than life. There's so much where God's saying, I'm not who you think I am. And then Jesus comes, and he's not the angry deity needing to be sated. He's a loving father Jesus speaks of a loving father who wants to rescue us from all the places we got lost. And he invites us into not a fight or flight response to God, but a growing increasingly secure in his affection. And to me, when I saw all that come together in this, even reflected in science, and I just go, wow, this is so amazing. That if you live out of your fears, and I would say religion, the Christianity I grew up in, was 80% about fear. Fear of hell, fear of missing God's blessings, fear of not doing enough, fear of not reading a Bible enough, fear of not praying enough, fear of not evangelizing enough. Fear, fear, fear was the number one tool our religious environment used to manage people. Now, we talked about God's love. We talked about it. But no one acted as if God really did, right?
Correct. They acted like, oh, yes, I love you, but if you don't follow me, I've got this really big stick and I'm going to crush you with it.
And Sarah and I have really appreciated, man, when God led us out of that through some of those betrayals I mentioned earlier, being lied about that I had an affair. Because when you're not part of the club anymore, they've got to marginalize you. And that's, I feel like that's some of what goes on in my blog and Facebook comments. People got to marginalize me because I'm not saying it the way they're comfortable with me saying it. And so they want to put me on the other team. And I just go, I'm not on the other team. I'm not a CNN acolyte. I'm not diehard committed to the left. I think the rioting of the left this spring is every bit as troublesome as the storming of the Capitol, except the stakes were different in what happened in the Capitol. And I realized not everybody that went to the Capitol and went to the Trump rally were there to launch this insurrection, but there were a number of people involved in a higher stakes game and really sought to overthrow an election. So that's what we're talking about. But when fear, what I've appreciated is I think why I've become, and I hope it's true, a little more broadly able to recognize the good in both sides and hope for something more common ground is because I don't process political thought out of my fight or flight mode or my tribal identity mode. I don't need to be a dyed-in-the-wool Republican. I don't need to be a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. I'm neither one. If you want to know what I really am, I'm anti-partisan. I think both political parties
are
ruining the country we live in. So you just made your political views clear, Kyle.
I did. I did just drop a little precursor on that. That's absolutely correct.
You may want to keep your family away from this podcast. But I know for me, I live at peace with what's going on. Even when, you know, things are going on in our country that I think are really scary. And I think a civil war could be at foot. And there's angered extremist elements, both right and left, that are willing to take up arms to make their vision for the country happen for everybody else. And it's not the blood of patriots who are on behalf of the whole working for good. It's people with very specific targeted agendas. And I'm grateful that I can live in that space now going, I like a little of that. I don't like that so much. And I want to invite people into that same reality. You don't have to live in the anguish of my life's coming to me from the outside.
Yeah.
Because life's coming to you from the inside and where Jesus wants to make himself known. And when you can relax out of the fear, fight, and flight mode, and instead embrace God's transcendence and see him, listen to him, relax into his love, you're in a better place to process life as it unfolds. I am. I'm nuts about that. We've been talking about that for 17 years on this podcast.
Yeah.
Because it's such a freer way to live.
That's part of the thing that grieves or concerns my heart. And one of the things that I really appreciated about you when we first got to know each other, And since then, you still have remained true to this, but you're willing to ask the questions. And I think that's the spooky part, is if we're not willing to ask questions and venture into some of those spaces and really, whether we are going to be in alignment with one answer or not, like there's things that we just need to have the freedom to question and explore it and say, what's the best for the heart of humanity here? And if we lose that ability to be able to even ask a question without having all holy hell rain down on us because we ask the question, then it's like, oh my gosh, like what is the hope of drawing those hearts back into the middle and to where we're building relational bridges instead of just creating these epic chasms that put the Grand Canyon to shame?
Yeah, and I know I talked a lot this spring when I did the Embracing His Glory series about how Jesus comes to poke holes in our pretensions. Mm. And I'm very comfortable talking about places in my life that I believed with all my heart at the time and found out later that it wasn't what Jesus was inviting me into. It was Wayne's rejection of it. Sometimes my better self, sometimes my worse self. But to me, the whole journey is about poking holes in our illusions or delusions, if you want to use that. So I've even in the article, I said, I've lived most of my life under lies. I have. Yeah. I'm still living my life under lies now. I just don't know where they are. If I knew where they were, I would abandon them. And one of the ways to find that out is to keep talking to Jesus and keep talking to other people and asking questions and being open to answers. And once you feel like you already have all the truth you need, and we've talked about that before, I think that's where you stop growing.
Yeah.
And I'm very open to the conversations that say, hey, let's explore this. And am I missing something here? Because I might be. But when people are telling you that you believe something you know you don't believe, then you go, it's probably not where I'm going to get that. But I don't like being the one to poke holes in people's illusions, because they always make you the enemy, particularly the ones with the duct tape that are going to duct tape the illusion back up, because everything out there is scary. And right in here, if I can have this thought and this process the way I want it, and I hope, and I, by the email, I mean, the large number of emails I got from people saying that helped me so much, not only internally see where I might be a bit broken, but also loving people around me that might be a bit broken. And it wasn't to judge and dismiss. I've never dismissed anyone on this podcast or this show. I'll engage you if you differ with me. We're better off if you're at least listening and not so angry. I've learned that angry people, even when you say, hey, this is true, will absolutely turn around and say, no, it's not.
Yeah.
One of my best definitions of a toxic person is someone who thinks they know you better than you know you.
Mm.
Or they're accusing you of being duplicitous. That when you say, hey, this is how what I think, they go, no, it's not.
Yeah. I'll tell you what you think.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Well, no, even that, like, neuroscience and neuropsychology shows us that when the prefrontal cortex shuts down and you go to the amygdala, the ability to think and to rationalize is gone. That's why, for example, in couples counseling, they teach people how to disengage from the argument, because when they're shame trigger or when they're operating out of the fight or flight mode, when they're in their amygdala, the ability to do relationship is gone, because it's all about survival and self-preservation, whether that be your core identity or whether that be your physical bodily safety, but when we're processing there, the ability to build authentic interpersonal relationship with another person is no longer possible, because the parts and the centers of the brain that help you be able to create those are no longer online. They've been completely shut off, and now it's solely animalistic thinking.
And isn't it true in autopsies or MRIs or whatever, I've heard this, I don't know 100% if it's true, that if you live out of fear all the time, your amygdala is larger than the prefrontal cortex.
So it can't,
by percentage or by, what size it's supposed to be. And the prefrontal cortex, if you learn to live in love and trust and more relaxed, then that's a bigger center for the brain. Is that true?
To a degree, what happens is it's more about the neural pathways. And again, this is, I'm by no means have my doctorate in neuropsychology, but it's a lot of it is the routing of the neural pathways and where we're processing. So for example, if we are so used to trauma and so used to operating out of the amygdala, even a slight argument or a slight trigger or a slight insult, instead of our prefrontal cortex being able to pause that, process it and say, okay, they may not have meant it that way. Even if there was a hint of slight, it'll go, the pathway to that amygdala and that fight and flight response will be deeper ingrained. So it'll bypass the prefrontal cortex almost simultaneously and go straight to the amygdala.
Danger.
Yes, exactly.
Protect.
So the rut to that part of the brain and that part of the processing mechanics of our brain becomes so entrenched that they have a much harder time pausing, taking a deep breath, not being reactive, and allowing the center of love, creative thought, relational processing to come online and dialogue about it.
And that's what makes me sad. When we talk about, people who are coming at me, I'm less angry I don't think there's a place that hits anymore where I get ticked off for me. I get really sad for them. Mm. I get really sad that we can't have a conversation about this, that you're not in a space where you can even listen. You just consider me a threat. And not necessarily because I am a threat. It's just that you're perceiving it as a threat to whatever your world is. And, we've always said this podcast is really to help people grow, help people who want to grow. So that's my heart for people. I really, we don't get on here and talk about stuff to make people mad. And you certainly, I wish we'd talk about this more, whatever it is that you wished you had said to me, but somehow felt, intimidated or not free to or whatever, I would love to go, okay, what are some of those? Because I would love to know, if you know of them, what they are. Maybe in a future podcast we'll get to some of that. Because
I think what my commitment to you as we're moving forward is just to intentionally raise a flag whenever I feel myself like going in that direction, be like, no, let's go there and let's see what let's try it, let's see what happens.
You have my permission completely.
That's what I love, is I know that it's already there.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.